It's supposed to promote the unity and solidarity of African states and be a collective voice for its people. But how well does the African Union really do this? And is this 50th anniversary really worth celebrating? That's what we're asking this week on Africa Today.
They were lofty promises forged in the Pan-Africanism of newly independent countries by leaders who'd liberated their people. The aim of Nkrumah, Kaunda, Nyerere and Selassie was to create an organisation that would promote the unity and solidarity of African states and act as a collective voice for the continent. But for all the presidential entourages and grand summits in Addis Ababa, the African Union's record is a chequered one. It did little while dictators like Amin, Mobutu and Bokassa went on looting and killing sprees and was divided politically and economically during the Cold War. Africa still struggles to speak with one voice, despite moves towards stronger regional integration. So how can the AU fulfil those pledges of 50 years ago and move the continent towards what its first female chair hopes will be a period of renewed Pan-Africanism, a true African renaissance?
Hello, I'm Henry Bonto and this is Africa Today. Our three guests have strong views on the African Union, its strengths, weaknesses, successes and failures. And where it should go from here, Sylvie Abua-Bradwell is the Executive Director of African People's Advocacy. She's written about the AU and the battle for Africa's soul. Joseph Ocheno is the political analyst who's just written of his desire to see a new crop of selfless Pan-Africanists emerge. And on the line from Boston, USA, is Professor Callistus Juma of Harvard University, who's chaired two high-level panels on biotechnology and science for the AU. Welcome to you all.
Good to be here.
And Professor, we're going to start off with you. You know the AU sort of from the inside, but also as an independent from the outside. When you look at this body, which is celebrating its golden jubilee, do you see an organisation that should be saying, hey, we're in Addis Ababa this week, let's have a party and say how great we are?
I think they should have a party and they should celebrate in the same way teenagers celebrate. It's in the early stages of the formation of the African Union. It's an experiment. An unprecedented experiment, no continent of this scale has ever tried to unite itself. And I think that they have a lot of work ahead of them, but I think what they have done so far is worth celebrating.
All right. Sylvie Abua-Bradwell, what say you on that then?
Definitely there should be a party because the African Union is, first of all, the triumph of a huge idea. And we should never forget that Africa is a continent that has been divided. It was not meant to have such a unifying body as the African Union. Having said that, they should have a party, but also a rethink in terms of the fact that the African Union is in danger of becoming a toothless bulldog like the Organization of African Unity before it. So I hope there will be time for...
All right. So a potentially toothless bulldog, but still worth celebrating
exactly.
In Addis Ababa. What say you, Joseph Ocheno?
If the African Union is to celebrate, they should indeed. But they should remember that the founding parents of the Organization of African Unity, 50 years ago this month, were fewer predominantly men, fewer men, less enabled, but facing a tough war from colonialists who did not want to let go Africa. Today, Africa has huge potentials. African Union badly needs men and women, leaders who should say, this is Africa, this is our Africa, this is the way we're going to do it. Unless and until we begin to have enough of those guys, and I don't see many of them, it's no time for celebration.
What's wrong with the current, what's wrong with the current crop of leaders who'll be meeting in Addis this week? What's wrong with the likes of John Mahama of Ghana? What's wrong with the likes of, let's say, Rwanda's Paul Kagame, Jacob Zuma of South Africa, three of the most respected leaders on the continent?
I welcome Zuma. Hama went through a process. I don't like guns. I don't like warriors. I don't like men who don't respect their constitutions. I don't like guys who say no. Africa of today should be the China of 50 years ago. No, Africa of today is going to be led by ideas. Africa of today is going to be a continent that respects women, respects children, respects their population, mobilizes their resources. And to that extent, yes, by and large, Rwanda has done well. I need to see an African group of leaders, men and women, who are able to put African wealth on the table transparently so that we're able to tell the founding parents of 50 years ago today that we fought and mobilized to liberate South Africa. Today, the wealth of South Africans are there for ordinary South Africans and ordinary Africans rather than boardroom men who shoot their people at bay.
I heard Sylvie sigh in an exasperated fashion. Why?
Because, number one, while it is true that the African Union has its failings, we must understand that the African Union is only as good as African people, meaning even ourselves. So the main failures of the African Union are the fact that the ideas of the unity of Africa was not really born in Africa itself. It is something that started in the diaspora with people who were inspired by external ideas to Africa, such as Marxism and so on and so on. They never understood that at the core of being African is democracy. In every single African village, we have what is called the discussion tree. So when I say the African Union needs a rethink, it needs to go back to the core principles of what being African is.
So you're saying the rethink is not about the institution itself? Because when you look at the African Union,
it's about what they are promoting. Okay. They need to be promoting a return to the democratic way of ruling African peoples, which is, as Joseph was mentioning, the wealth of the people should be back to the people. And number two, we must also understand that an institution like the African Union needs money to operate. And right now, we have many Africans, including in the diaspora, who have means, but they prefer to put these means into foundations, the old model that was implemented here in Europe. We need money to make the African Union become effective, instead of leaving it to the Chinese to build the new office and so on and so on. Until we all have this rethink, it won't happen. And then we also understand
and that needs leadership.
Exactly. But this leadership has to come from everybody, not only from the African Union alone. We must understand that money is necessary, and entrepreneurs need to put money in these institutions.
All right. Well, let's go to Professor Juma. Would you agree that the African Union needs a serious rethink, and it's not for the wealthy, the people in the diaspora and others to leave it to the leaders or to leave it to the institution itself? I suppose in some ways I'm asking you, how does the African Union persuade people who don't spend any time thinking about it, don't ever go to its summits, don't get involved in ECOSOC or the Pan-African Parliament or any of these institutions, the African Court of Justice, to think this is my institution and I want to get involved and reform it?
I think it's really important to understand the evolution of the African Union over the last 50 years in two very distinct phases. That at its creation, the biggest challenge for the continent was decolonization. And much of the continent was still colonies. And the formation of new states, the post-independent states. And that really ended with the independence of South Africa. And so if you are to judge the African Union over that period, when it was the Organization of African Unity, it did that job, which is to decolonize the continent.
Professor, at the same time, during that period, when it was urging decolonization and supporting those southern African countries, it allowed or sat by while a number of people ruled their countries as though it was their own personal fiefdom, killing, rampaging, looting at will, and other African countries didn't get involved because of this principle of territorial integrity and non-interference.
Yeah, that's certainly inexcusable. Nobody can excuse that. But that's not the purpose for which the organization was created. So we should judge it against the standards upon which it was created. When the job of decolonization ended, the African Union reinvented itself and started to focus on economic integration with a greater emphasis on the role of regional entities. And I think if you look at Africa today, the fact that next year or next 2-3 years, the African continent will be growing faster than the world average. That is something to really reflect upon and say, given that opportunity, where do we move the continent from now to the next phase?
So one shouldn't be quite so harsh in the judgment given what the task was in 1963. But some would say, and if Nkrumah were still here, he might say future generations should judge us harshly, because we had an opportunity on the 25th of March 1963 to really go for that Pan-African organization, to have a real Pan-African institution. Instead, we opted for a much looser association, which allowed terrible things to happen on the continent, and that's an indictment. You might say that.
I would actually say that the vision was an important one, but a vision must also be judged against the reality. If you take a country like the Democratic Republic of the Congo, which is the size of Western Europe, with a road network that is equivalent to that of Rwanda or Qatar, there's no way that country is going to pull itself together and perform its role as a hub of the continent without significant investment in infrastructure to connect it with the rest of the continent. That's not something you build by simply wishing it. And so I think we have to distinguish between the aspiration, which is a real one and a very important one, but the reality of building a very large landmass that is three times the size of the United States.
All right, okay. Professor, for the moment, thank you very much. So aspiration, you've got a lot of aspiration, as you said, versus the reality. You've got to be practical about this.
Yes, but with due respect to the professor, what he has failed to mention is that when the African Union decided to change the name from the Organization of African Unity to the African Union about 10 years ago, it was mainly because it understood the failures of the previous organization. And in the Constitution, there is provisions for implementing peace, for driving prosperity, and every single thing, the good governance in the Constitution. Now, the challenge is that the African Union needs to the means to implement what its own constitution says. But now we are in a stronger position than the Nkrumah and the Nyerere were, in the fact that we have the economic development that was mentioned before. But also, we can work in collaboration with entrepreneurs. But what we must understand is that something like the Democratic Republic of Congo cannot operate without peace, no matter how much growth there is.
And isn't this, Joseph Ochieng, one of the greatest failings of the Organization of African Unity, now African Union, back in 63, and in fact before, there was talk of a standing army. Yeah. We talk about that again today. There are African troops, African Union troops, often backed by Western money in a number of countries.
Driven
by Western interests. Although if you are somebody in Eastern Congo or in Southern Somalia, you won't care whose interests, you just want to be saved. And isn't that one of the greatest indictments in the 50 years? There's been too much war, too much instability, too many coups, often run by self-interested leaders.
Quisling leaders in Africa.
Quisling.
Indeed. Henry, two quick points. One is that one of the things that Nkrumah would feel rather sad about is the opportunities that these guys have today that they didn't. The Organization of African Unity, three pillars. One, liberation. Two, to be fair to them, was total unity of the African continent. They couldn't do it because the imperialists couldn't allow them to do it. But three, genuinely economic prosperity. And in fact, by and large, African economies amidst that war, amidst that big chain around them, by and large, did rather well. Nkrumah suggested one central army, one central government.
When you say did rather well, what do you mean? Because you look at the continent right now, population of about a billion people, and the majority are still not earning enough to be able to build.
No, no, I'm putting in context. Yeah. You're talking about 50 years ago when these guys came to table to surround themselves to say, how do we liberate this entire continent? I'm actually pushing a yardstick. If you look at, the first 10 years of independence predominantly between, say, the average 1963 to 1973. Mm-hmm. By and large, a number of achievements were made, including focus on the liberation movement. I mean, liberation.
But wasn't there too much focus on the liberation movements, but not enough on the kinds of things that really give people...
No, I'm coming to that.
The infrastructure that...
Henry, I'm coming to that. Yeah. In fact, I was simply saying that, look, it was about three. African unity, African liberation, which they were working on and against and rather under a very difficult time, and economic prosperity. What the African Union supposedly came up with, which is fair enough, is the emphasis on democracy and democratic institutions, which Silva and I not only agree, but we're simply saying that at the moment we should begin to take for granted. I think to suggest that that the situation today over Congo, you know, we want to blame it back to what it was at the time, to me that's where I'm where I necessarily disagree. the current crop of African leaders have got an opportunity with African resources, African opportunities, substantially educated population, huge, large population.
Okay.
You know, all they need is to mobilize and organize themselves. And you're quite right that many of them actually tend to focus too much on self-interest.
All right. Thank you very much for the moment. Lots of comments have been coming into us via the Facebook page this week. Let's take a look at a few. And we'll start off with Kubaka Kikletwe, who says, the African continent has never been fully independent from the West. Puppet leaders still control the political and economic platform on their behalf. Another one has come in from Omotayo Adeke. Omotayo says, I think it's a great shame we can't turn the clock back to 1963 and take some of the optimism and visionary thinking of the founding fathers and put it to better use in 2013. Who and where are Nkrumahs and Selassies of today amongst our current crop of leaders? And finally, this from Noble Roberts. One of the most recent African leaders keen to see a strong African union with clout was Gaddafi. For all his faults, he was a completely independent thinker, something that is lacking within the union now. And if you'd like to have your voice heard, here's how you can get in touch.
Keep your thoughts coming in. Email africa@presstv.co.uk or text us on +44 78 00 00 8086. Or you can go to our Facebook fan page, Africa Today, Press TV, London. Or you can now follow us on Twitter. We are at Africa Today TV.
Back to our discussion, and we'll pick up with you, Professor Juma, out there in Boston in the US. The consensus from our Facebook writers seems to be that they would like to see more truly Pan-African independent thinking. Would you agree with that, or do you think that is about an aspiration and we have to focus on the kinds of things that Nkrumah was saying all those years ago? We have to industrialize, we have to put down that infrastructure, because that's how they've integrated the United States, that's how they've integrated the European Union, the free movement of goods, services and people. You can go from one part of the landmass to another and get rid of as many barriers, tariffs and taxes as possible. What do you say?
I think that today Africa needs leaders who are focused on managing economic development, not simply issuing rhetorical statements. And the good news is that we are actually starting to see such leaders emerge. You look at what President Kagame has done to revive a country that had been written off.
But the moment you mentioned President Kagame, I got a little laughter to my left and a little laughter to my right, because some say, yes, on the one hand, he's done some tremendous things economically, lifted people out of poverty, but at what cost to freedoms, ordinary democratic assembly, people saying, I am free to challenge you and to stand against you without being killed?
What?
I think we are shifting between the organization of the African Union and the individual leaders and the individual countries. I think that what's really happening is a real change in the character of leadership. Last year alone, 6 African countries elected engineers for president. I don't think that this is an accident. The African continent is starting to select for leaders who are focused on solving practical problems. And that is, I think, where we need to focus, is to think about how do we now move to the next phase of a new Africa that is more integrated, that's connected economically, where you have infrastructure that allows countries to trade with each other, freer mobility of people, greater integration of entrepreneurial activities. That's the kind of leadership that Africa needs, and that's the kind of leadership that's starting to emerge at the moment. And my last point on this one is that Africa is performing an experiment that has never been performed anywhere else. And so we can only judge it against its own objectives rather than an idealistic position of what it
would actually. All right, Professor, thank you very much indeed. Sylvie, you are desperate to get him.
Yes, absolutely. Because what Professor Juma seems to fail to understand is that it's not the first time that we have had economic booms in Africa. Everybody gets excited about Rwanda or Ethiopia and so on. This is not new. We had what was Ivory Coast, which is now Cote d'Ivoire, was a miracle 30 years ago.
But it has collapsed. In the 60s.
But it has collapsed. Why? Because there was not the accountability that is necessary to ensure that the money that is that comes from economic development goes to investment, goes to the people. That's why.
But what he's saying is that a different caliber of leader is being elected.
No,
people
not
who
at all.
Understand
at all.
How
as
things
long
work.
As, no, no, no. As
Appetite
long as we start praising,
understand.
As long as we are still praising the Kagames of this world, there won't be any progress because there will be a fake development for about 10 years and then there will be trouble again because people are not satisfied. People are angry. So what do you do then? What you do is that you ensure that the basic principles of democracy and accountability are in place. And that's
and should,
why
is it the African Union's
Union,
job?
Exactly. That's why the African Union needs to implement that. But for that, it needs means. That's why I'm saying these entrepreneurs who are building, they should also understand that investing in the African Union, it's about development as well, because it will give the African Union the means to implement what its charters says and create a good environment for development and peace and prosperity in Africa.
And so, Joseph, that means, I mean, for Sylvie's passion to be realized, and it would require a new African Union, something much stronger, much more robust, and much more willing to interfere and to say to a Kagame, to say to another leader, for example,
Museveni.
Say, no, it could be Museveni, look, you've had two terms already, you've had three terms, you've had four terms, and Mugabe, that's it. You can't stand any more times.
Exactly.
And perhaps to tell Jacob Zuma, my very respectable leader and a friend, that what we saw in Maracana the other day, where Africans actually yearning for their very basic rights for
exactly.
which some of us lost our leaders.
Exactly.
Idi Amin was imposed on Uganda because of South Africa. And to make another point, the skyscrapers in South Africa came up under apartheid. It does not mean, therefore, that you justify apartheid. So when you talk about the development of Africa, and when I talk about leaders and ideas, it is not necessarily about having some of these intellectual guys who get degrees from abroad.
Right.
No, it is about translating real Africanist issues and ideas into realities for African
people.
All right. Professor, we're going to finish with you. Do you still think that it's worth having a party in Addis Ababa this week?
Yes, I think it's worth having a party in Addis Ababa because this is, if you like, an interim report of the African Union. There's a lot of work that needs to be done. The African presidents meet at least twice a year. There's a lot of learning that has happened at the moment among them, a lot of sharing of experiences. It's starting to function almost like an open university. I have seen it firsthand. And I actually don't agree that Africa should be Africa's today and Africa's leaders today should be judged by the failures of 20, 30 years ago.
All right,
I think we have a new continent.
Thank you very much indeed, Professor. And that's it for today. Thanks to all those of you who've sent in comments to us. Email africa@presstv.co.uk or text us to +44 7800 008086. And don't forget, you can now follow us on Twitter @AfricaTodayTV. Many thanks to our guests, Sylvie Abua-Bradwell, Joseph Ocheno, and Professor Calestus Juma. Do join us next week for another edition of Africa Today. Till then, it's goodbye from me. And on behalf of the whole team, thanks again for watching.